welcome back to Ping. This is episode 171 for reals. Ping, of course, the weekly show that brings you all of the hottest stories that Microsofties are talking about. Last week we had a blunder. We said it was episode 171. It was not. This is the real episode 171. And Paul, I started to think that I was missing something major in the world. Like I was looking for natural disasters or like some sort of like catastrophe, something that would prevent people from getting online, because our comments last week was like a mere 3 people. Clearly, this is of no fault of our own, and there must be some sort of major outage of the WWW, and therefore people are trying desperately to comment on Ping, but failing.
Yeah, I think what happened was people were searching around for Ping episode 170, and they thought they were like missing some context, or there was just some type of rift in the universe.
Yes, that's what happened.
That's what happened.
Some sort of time-space continuum set apart, drawn back together thing. Anyway, this is the actual episode 171. And for the one person who answered last week's question of the week, which I thought was a good question too, or last episode's question of the week, we asked them what was their sort of favorite thing that had come out of Microsoft this year in terms of technology. And Herb said Photosynth. Now, while Photosynth is not necessarily out this year, there is the application for it on Windows Phone. And I'm still a diehard Photosynth fan, regardless of when it came out. So thank you, Herb, for your input on that. Paul, did you have an answer for that question of the week?
I liked anything that you talked about in your Tech Week videos.
Tech Fest videos,
That's
Paul.
What it was, Tech Fest videos. This whole Ping 170, 171 just totally threw me for a loop.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm just drunk, but other than that, we're all loopy. Should we just start the show?
Let's do it.
All right. All right, Paul, so most years I have the privilege of attending South by Southwest Music Festival in Austin, Texas. And this is, first of all, it is the best people watching you'll ever experience at any festival ever. The rock and roll people come out from under rocks to go to South by Southwest Festival. It's really great. But in addition to awesome music, indie bands, great art, there's an interactive track. And in the interactive track, they talk about, guess what, Paul?
Interactive stuff?
Yeah. Games and stuff, too. Cool stuff. And this year, best in show from the interactive track was given to a game called Contre Jour, which is designed to showcase the capabilities of HTML5 and IE10. And it's basically a website that acts like an application, which, you know, many people are saying is the future of the web.
Yeah, I think that this is really awesome. In the last year or so, I've been trying to dive into HTML5 and JavaScript and relearn how to do some of these fundamentals. And when I see games and executions like this, I'm very impressed. So first off, this game was released on, I believe it was the iPad back a couple of years ago, and it won like Game of the Year in all these different award categories, and I think across 10 different countries for it's really awesome gameplay. And now that it's built in HTML5 and JavaScript, it runs incredibly well on IE10 with all the multi-touch gestures. And I had actually never heard of the game before, and I just opened it up last night and started playing with it just to, you know, work for this story. And then I realized I started playing it for like 45 minutes. I was pretty addicted to it.
Loved it. You loved it.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask you if you actually got a chance to play Pirates Love Daisies, but talk about it in a second. I want to finish your thoughts on Contre Jour.
Yeah, so I haven't played Pirates with Daisy or From Daisy or whatever that one is, but this one, you know, I was looking at it and it's so well done, and it has like things that make it work across all these different platforms. So you can, you know, run it on your PC and it uses mouse gestures, and it has like tailored instructions on how you can use the mouse, but if you run it on a touch-enabled device, it tells you like what you should be doing with your finger gestures. It works really well. I tried looking at the code behind it, and it's like 15,000 lines of JavaScript, and it uses a bunch of different canvas elements, and just beautiful game, a lot of fun. I think this is from the same team that built Cut the Rope, and there's a lot of, you can see like a lot of the same types of gestures and things, and I think this one came first and then Cut the Rope came second, but it's still a very fun game, looks great, and kudos to this team, and they certainly deserve the you know, the recognition that they're getting right now.
Best in show! Not too shabby. Did you get a chance to play Cut the Rope, Paul?
I have played Cut the Rope. I showed... Yeah, that's a fun game. I'd like to see a version of Cut the Rope that uses the accelerometer. So like as you like turn the device, like gravity actually shifts in some other way. And I think that would be an interesting dynamic to add to those types of puzzle games.
Yeah, absolutely. And the only reason I wanted to mention Pirates Love Daisies, which is a tower defense game. Paul, come on now, Pirates Daisies.
I think the only tower defense game I've played was the one that Larry the Lightbulb Larson released as an open source kit on Windows
Scripted!
Phone.
Script TV!
Yes, that's what it was.
Yeah, also genius. But Pirates Love Daisies was another game that played in the browser for IE9, and it got a lot of press for being fabulous at the time. And now Contrajure is obviously doing this with IE10, so congratulations! Get out there, get playing, and if you can answer Paul's request and build the game using the accelerometer, Paul will send you something of his.
I'll send you my kudos.
There it is. All right, Paul, last week we talked about Microsoft changing their mind about the licensing for Office 13, and you know what? It's our prerogative, because apparently we've gone ahead and changed our mind again. But all of these changes are actually for the better, don't you say? Not that we've mentioned what this one is, but all of these changes are really benefit our consumers. So anyway, so this most recent switch has been that they are actually going to be enabling Flash in Windows 8, where they used to have to, in order to view Flash videos, I think they had to bump out into the desktop mode. Is that right?
Yeah. So previously with the modern UI version of Internet Explorer, Flash was essentially disabled by default and could only be specifically enabled by Microsoft or by advanced users to modify some configuration files so that you could essentially whitelist specific websites that Flash would work well with touch gestures and from like a security standpoint and performance and battery life standpoint. And now they've changed it to the opposite, where every Flash site is enabled by default in the touch version, and that there's now just a blacklist. So if they know that there are certain sites that are either non-performant, they kill your battery life, they're not really touch friendly, or some other reasons, they can Microsoft can essentially blacklist the site so that Flash is disabled by default.
Right.
The hills are alive
with the sound of music. The reason why they did this is that Microsoft did some research on thousands upon thousands of websites that they researched and realized that touch gestures work just fine with Flash, and I am somewhat of a in the HTML5 camp, so I'm a little miffed that Microsoft is extending the life cycle of Flash. But from a consumer point of view, it's probably going to work just fine for a lot of these sites. Like if you look up something on Yelp and you go to their click through to the link from Yelp to the restaurant, there's a decent chance it's probably made 3 or 4 years ago in Flash, and it's probably going to be a really basic site that you're just going to tap around, not going to use like multi-touch gestures or like a right-click menu or any of these other things, or like something that you might not necessarily have to hover over. So I totally get it from Microsoft's standpoint. This is something that will hopefully be very very consumer-friendly. Though the developer inside of me would love to embrace, the non-plugin based web with
HTML5. But you have to realize that for, most web consumers out there. They're going to go to a website. It's not going to work. They're not going to be able to do what they want to do. They're not going to really understand why, and they're going to just blame the browser. You know what I mean? And so you want to give them the best end-user experience, and I think this is absolutely the right move, regardless of what Selfish Paul thinks.
Fair enough.
So one of the things that Microsoft has been talking about and gearing our whole company towards is sort of this consistent experience, right? So you can get a consistent experience on your Xbox, on your phone, on your PC. It all kind of looks the same, and it all kind of feels the same, and that's kind of cool, right? Paul?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can be.
Yeah, it is, Paul. I need some enthusiasm out of you. All right. Anyway, it has been said that one of the ways Microsoft is really moving the bar and just sort of surpassing our competition is cross-platform gaming. So here's an example, Paul. There's this game called Skulls of the Shogun. It's a turn-based game, fighting game, where you play like a general Akimoto in a war, and you're fighting dead samurais or something like this in the afterlife, right? Whatever. Anyway, what you can do is you can start it on your phone and then go home and pick it up right where you left off on your Xbox. Or if you're playing on your Xbox, you can take your turn and then the person you're playing against, if I'm playing against you, you can make your move on the phone. So really, you've got this seamless integration, this pick up and play across all the screens, which is really revolutionary.
Yeah, I think that there are very few companies that are able to execute on a vision like this, owning all the different platforms from the desktop and laptop OS to a tablet OS to a phone OS to a gaming console OS, that gaming console being the most heavily used across the world, being Xbox and Xbox Live. So this is something that Microsoft certainly has a strategic ability to execute on. Now, the question is how well can Microsoft enable either teams inside the company or external developers to be able to really take advantage of all these different platforms in a productive and creative way.
Right. I mean, that's exactly what we said when we talked about Smart Glass, which is, of course, Smart Glass gives you sort of extra content and control of various content through your Xbox, right? So it's another way of incorporating your phone and your Xbox one-on-one. And we always said, well, this is really going to depend on third-party developers building cool stuff. And I think I'm going to have to bring up Skulls of the Shogun again. I think this is a really great example of having it done third-party, and it's done really well. So hopefully other developers will follow suit and start making more and more content like this, because I think it's absolutely the way to go. Me knowing that I can, like I said, start on one device, go somewhere else, pick it up on another, similar with Netflix, I can start a movie on my phone and I can go home and watch it right where I left off on my Xbox. I mean, this is something that I didn't know I needed, but now that I have it, I need it.
Yeah, I think it certainly makes sense in the media scenario where you want to be able to pick up your movie where you left off. Like, that's definitely a clear win. There's a number of times where I've been watching something on my Xbox, and then, I get tired and I want to go to bed, but then I pick it up on my tablet or on my computer and just finish watching it there. So that's definitely nice. From a gaming point of view, I think it makes sense already in certain things, like turn-based games. I do that all the time with Scrabble. I'll be playing Scrabble either on my tablet or on Facebook or something like that, and I can easily have the same set of people that I'm playing, the same set of turns, all available across all these devices.
So you've been playing Scrabble, but I requested a game months ago, and you have not accepted my challenge.
You're not playing Scrabble, you're playing some Scrabble knockoff. I don't even remember what it's called.
Like, Words by Post!
Yes, that's what you're playing. Yeah, it's a totally different game.
I have been kicking Herb's ass!
Stop the program!
Well, sorry, Herb.
That's not me. So,
don't you remember like 130 some episodes ago we had a Scrabble challenge and didn't I destroy you?
First of all, that was a character I was playing. That was all for the ratings, and there was so much pressure and lights. I need it on my phone in my hand while I can relax, caress it from the comfort of my couch. That's how my brain works best.
Yeah. Well, so some other challenges with this is if you. And first off, when they say cross-platform gaming, this is more like cross-device gaming. Like you're not necessarily looking at games that are working across, like, you know, Mac, PC, or like, you know,
right. The
Mac
platform
OS,
would be
Windows,
the phone,
Linux.
And the other platform would be the Xbox.
Right. And there's like seriously different touch inputs and control inputs in this. So like, if you have like a first-person shooter, there's going to be some serious difference between playing with a console controller versus playing with a mouse and a keyboard. And it could give one team, you know, like an unfair advantage if they have a PC because they may have much more, a much higher resolution on their screens. They may have faster machines, and they may have all these other things that could give them some type of advantage. So it might not make sense in every case, but certainly the turn-based games or things that, you know, you can do somewhat asynchronously, and there may be a benefit to seeing it on the big screen. Like, I don't think I would necessarily care to see Scrabble on the big screen, but there could be some other things that would be available on the Xbox that could be interesting. But things like Wordament, for example, that's another thing where even though it's a word game, if I were able to type out the words, I could probably have easily 110 words per game versus like 80 or 90 words per game.
Really? You think you could type it faster than just dragging and swiping with your finger?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Way faster.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd like to see some user tests on that.
Yeah, okay. I can easily do that. There's all sorts of online Wordament games where all you can do is type and you can't swipe. And
it's called Boggle.
Yeah, I think it's called Tangle Word or something like that. But anyway, I definitely think this can be interesting. It has to be applied to the right type of creative play so that it's designed right to be fun on all devices without giving any single device some type of unfair advantage. Or you just have matchmaking where each person that you play is on the same device. Or you can have like complimentary experiences. I think it'd be really cool in a future version of Halo, for example, if you can actually get different types of experiences. Like you use the tablet to start looking at maps, or you do strategy and you can like deploy troops in certain areas, and then you pick up your controller and you're actually one of those troops trying to accomplish the mission. I think that would be an interesting style of play to experiment with as well.
Absolutely. All right, well then... There you go. It's nice to see good press being written about Microsoft, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on cross-device gaming. So it's pretty well known that Microsoft is out there targeting the young folks of the world, trying to get people in their, you know, early years working with computers and hopefully, you know, using our products. And one way to get this done is to hit up the old college campuses and give them Microsoft Office 365. I would not turn down a free Microsoft Office 365, and I think the hopes here is that the kids don't turn it down either. Oh, the kids. You know, it used to be I was one of them, and now I'm calling them kids.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Sad. Anyway, yeah, you want to get them on it, loving it, using it, and really I think that, you know, once I think that it's similar to a Windows phone where it's like, if you could just try it, if you just try it, you'll like it. So I think that's where they're going here.
Yeah, I would classify this group as young adults more so than kids.
The kids these days!
Get off my lawn.
So this is definitely something that's interesting. It's a 3-month free trial, which means that you can get Office 365, so Word, PowerPoint, Excel. I think Outlook may come in there as well.
Definitely OneNote.
Oh yeah, OneNote is huge. It's... To this day, whenever I meet someone that's in college or if I do a presentation on a college campus and I'll show off OneNote, they're like, how do I not know about this?
And oohs and ahs.
Yeah, it's just so many great things specifically on OneNote where you can like record people's voices or a lecture as you're typing, and then it synchronizes what's being said with what you're typing. So if you don't have full notes in an area, you can go back and listen to it right at that point in the lecture.
worth its
pretty
weight
cool.
in gold.
Pretty
right
cool.
There. Anyway,
Officers Survived, you get a 3-month free trial. And should you want to continue that as a student in an accredited college or university, you can actually get Office 365. Instead of the normal $100 a year, you can get it for $79.99 US dollars
for 4 years. That's not 80
Boom.
Bucks a year. That's
Boom.
80 bucks total.
And it works for 4 years. So if you want to learn Office or have a good productivity suite that you can use online and offline, try out Office 365.
So the moral of the story is I'm going to re-enroll in community college.
Good luck getting in.
All right, everybody, that wraps it up for this week. Thank you for watching. Please participate. Paul and I get lonely and low self-esteem if you do not post messages in the comments section. We want to have a lively and friendly discussion, and we need you to make that happen. Otherwise, it's just me and Herb, sometimes Paul, just listening to the crickets. So please, please, please interact with us. And the question of the week, this Paul, we were talking about college and our days at college, some of us further away than others. And I went to NYU, Paul. Where'd you go?
University of Michigan.
UM. Is there like a, are you the Huskies or the Dogs or something?
The Wolverines.
The Wolverines, okay. We were the Violets. But I think since I've left, we've actually adopted like a real tough mascot. I think we're like the Panthers or something now. I have to check on that. But when I went to NYU, it was the Violets, the most non-threatening flower of them all.
Just put an N in there and it's Violence.
Well, no, it's not Violence. Violet, the flower. Anyway, we want to talk about you guys and your college experience and what sort of technology you were using and could not have lived without. My time in college... I'll talk a little bit more about it next week when we do a follow-up. But I did spend a lot of time on Photoshop. Photoshop was like, oh my God, the most amazing thing when I was in school. It was probably just launched back then. Anyway, in the meantime, follow me on Twitter. Download the new Windows 8 Twitter application to do so at Alfoy.
And me at Paul Mask.
See you next week.